Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions.
Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. Betty Ann Stenmark, I am so excited. And welcome. I'm very happy you're here. Welcome. Here we are in New York City, finding an extra hour.
Yes, I'm so excited. Okay, so Betty Ann, give me the brief synopsis, your time in dogs, just a little bit.
50-some-odd years,
yes.
Short.
Yes.
So I grew up in North Vancouver, British Columbia, with a English Cocker, kind of, as my mother said, a show dog not. And I recently found a bunch of stories about him that my mother had written. Very fun. And then I had St. Bernards because some kid at school, her mother brought her St. Bernard to school, and it was an early version of what the kids do today. And I fell in love with that dog. It was huge. It was wonderful. And I had to have one. So when I finally moved out home, was married, there was a litter in Victoria that I went to see. And of course, I brought one home. And the rest is kind of history. I bred, I think at least a dozen litters of St. Bernards and managed to have heart disease endemic in those dogs. So if you ever had to do an X-ray for hips and they got an injection of anesthetic, they were dead. Oh. There were actually five of them that did that on the table.
Oh, my God.
It was not a lot of fun.
No.
I love the breed still, but that was not an easy time. And then I married Roy Stenmark, who brought 16 Lhasa Apso's to the marriage. And I have to say, don't hold this against me, but it's not my breed.
It's a lot of hair.
A lot of hair, and I can remember the veterinary clinic I worked at many years ago, and we had this little dog come in that you couldn't even vaccinate. So I can remember we put him between a gate and a chain link fence so we could give him a shot, and I thought, where the heck did this come from? Turned out it was one of those I'd hand raised.
Oh no!
Oh no! If you don't think temperament isn't highly inherited.
Yes.
So then we decided that we'd get a breed that neither one of us had. Roy was already judging St. Bernards, which is where I had met him at the 1974 National Specialty. John Stanek and Larry Powell had overdrawn, and they brought in some guy by the name of Roy Stenmark to do the overload. And I said, who the hell's Roy Stenmark? And then he followed me all around that weekend.
Well, you know.
So anyway, the rest is history there. He came to visit in Vancouver, and I seemed to be engaged, and moved to the United States. Don't know that that was all that smart a move, but...
Like, you could go back now, see. Oops.
So we decided to get a breed that neither one of us had had, and we had a friend who was quite well-known in her Dandy Dinmonts, and another one in Border Terriers. And Lorna Rindle had an adult Dandy bitch before June Monahan had an adult Border bitch, because we'd been around long enough to know we weren't starting with a puppy. So we ended up with this two-year-old bitch who flew in, and our cat met her at the door, and she had his head in her mouth before we could open our mouths.
The poor cat.
He died of natural causes, which was nothing short of a miracle. When the dandies got a hold of him, he was so fat, they only got his fat.
I love it. Oh, my God.
He never drank water. He always drank milk. And one day we came home and found a mouse had drowned in his milk dish.
That was just wrong.
One hell of a cat.
Oh, my God.
The only one I've ever had. So then we began breeding Dandy Dinmonts, and 41 years later, we're still breeding, and that original bitch is still behind all of them.
Excellent.
They've changed a little.
A little, yeah.
We began with a bitch that had fabulous temperament, wonderful movement. She needed a head. She needed shorter. She needed to be longer, but she was a hell of a brood bitch. And yep. We then acquired her granddaughter, who was also a beautiful bitch, and between those two, we are where we are today.
Okay, so dandies are very, very low entry breed.
Very low.
And I don't know if you've heard some of, like, Bill Shelton talking about the endangered species and some of that. And I think dandies definitely fall into that category.
Definitely.
So talk to me about working with, this is fascinating to me, working with these breeds that you don't have diversity in your gene pool to speak of.
Oh, we don't have a gene pool. We have a gene puddle.
So how do you do that? Tell me about that.
I often am amused at people that have long-term plans for breeding. They're going to take this bitch to this other dog's great-grandfather, and we don't do that. The only puppies we keep are the ones who have the correct breed silhouette, who have good temperament, and hopefully good health. And from that, within the family, generally speaking, we consider out if 25% of the other dog is not our breeding.
Wow.
We brought in a dog from Finland who is 75% our breeding, but came from a bitch that's now the grandmother, who looked like our dogs, but was entirely unrelated. And we got lucky on that. So we breed more on phenotype, but we end up with a highly line-bred litter,
right.
A line. And thankfully, in 1998, I went to Australia and found a family of dandies that looked like our dogs, except they were long. And we had lost the long gene in this country. The dandy should be longer than the Skye Terrier in the group. And when is the last time you ever saw it? Actually, I've never seen it.
Yeah,
but we
I haven't.
When we fixed up the standard and filled in all the blanks, we didn't change the silhouette or the dimensions, because we felt if it gave you an excuse to have a shorter-bodied dog, we'd end up with upright and square.
Mm-hmm.
Because many of the dogs in the ring are upright mm-hmm. and square today.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not an easy thing. We accidentally had a brother-sister breeding last year, and the dog sitter was a little upset. And 7 weeks later, it was obvious this bitch was really pregnant. I was judging Santa Barbara that weekend, and it ended up being one of the most fabulous litters I've ever seen. There's two out of the three survivors that are exactly what I would hope would come from 41 years of selective
mm-hmm.
breeding.
Mm-hmm.
But we walk a fine line. There's lymphoma in the breed, and its inheritance is not really known, and there's many forms of it. There's a very lethal variety that mm-hmm. takes them out in 3 weeks,
mm-hmm.
which we lost our beautiful Angelina Ballerina to that.
I wondered.
Yeah. Yep. And then there's others that have survived chemo for 3 years mm-hmm. and done very well. And we also have glaucoma. People don't talk about it.
Okay.
And there's been a few, but thankfully so far not a lot.
Okay. So you have health issues that you're working around in your breeding program.
Yep.
Temperament?
We have, I am told, the best temperament in the world. We started out with good temperament, and to me, there is no compromise. We've had a couple of bitches born that were nice, that didn't have typical temperament. They were eliminated from the gene pool by spaying. There's one that looks like, that acts like a border collie in a Dandy Dinmont suit. She is a hell of an agility dog, a hell of an obedience dog, and she's not typical. And then we have another little scary one at home that looks like she'd bite you in the back of the ankle. She never has, but we couldn't sell her, nor could we put her down, so she lives at my house.
Oh, good. Biting your ankles.
Never yet.
Okay. Okay. So when you're talking about you've got, if you can get an outcross to you is 25% of the gene
yes,
pool.
Yes.
So you found in Finland, you found in Australia, and I remember, as I was trying to remember his name, Harry?
Harry.
Yes. God, I love that dog. Have you found anything else that you've been able to incorporate that you've liked?
No.
Okay.
Every time I've gone out, tried something, mm-hmm. I looked at what I had in the whelping box and I thought, that didn't work. For me, if it hasn't got a front assembly, it is immediately altered and out of the gene pool. When you don't have a front on a dog, you don't have head carriage, you don't have reach in front, usually no drive behind, and it just looks, it's a pet. It's
right.
gone. As
right.
a judge, that is very important to me. It's somewhere I don't compromise. I can't, because at my house, that's altered. It's a pet.
Yeah. And I think that that's tough because front assemblies, just across the board in every breed you can name, I think, in this country, aren't what you might want them to be.
There's very few. But the good dogs, the ones that keep rising to the top, there's a reason. When it ran around your backyard and that one that kept catching your eye, that was the one with a good front, with a good side gate. And that's the one that can rise above the rest. It just has the look of confidence. It's eye-catching.
Mm-hmm.
And no, it's not all about gait. But breed type, the typical structure and carriage is part of breed type. And without it, you really have nothing.
Yes, and I think that's a really great point that people get stuck between type and movement. But in reality, I think you're right. I think they're the same thing.
Oh, they are the same thing. That old question, what do you prefer, type or soundness? That's just nonsense. That's people not understanding what it's all about.
Okay, so dandies have very, very specific breed traits.
Yes.
So front assembly. Okay.
Yes.
And length.
Great.
We just talked
length.
About those two.
Yep.
Okay. So what's your next piece?
The curves. And the word, the operative word is slight. And it's a slight arch to the neck, a slight downward arch over the shoulders, a slight arch over the loin, not the back, not the rump, and a very slight drop over the croup, which sets the tail on in the correct position, which is at about 1 or 2 o'clock. That is one hell of a difficult package to get. So that is ultimately important. So correct size, around 24, 25 pounds. The heavier dogs are because they are very long in body. Mm-hmm. The old standard said 12 to 18 pounds. That would be a weedy little tiny bat. Wow. That doesn't work. Mm-hmm. So we have three elements of breed type. This very distinctive head, big eyes looking straight at you, the correct silhouette, and great length of body. And the great length of body for us is like the archetypical of what Annie Clark would call the drag of the English Cocker breed when they got long and low. Mm-hmm. Well, ours go upright and square, and they go upright and square very easily. So I often laugh at, I think it was old Bob Moore who wrote this column for Dog News talking yes. about, why can't you figure out what is rectangular and what is square? Well, some people just don't have it. And it is difficult if the entire ring is full of upright and square dogs and you have this one long, low one behind, and you don't have that breed silhouette in your mind's eye, you're mm-hmm. dead. You're going to mm-hmm. put up the pet. Mm-hmm. And the good dog's going to walk out.
And I think, coming from Clumber Spaniels, I understand this exact struggle. And I think one of the things that I saw, and I don't know if it's the column you're talking about or another one, but I remember reading once that the human eye is drawn to square because it is symmetrical.
Oh.
And that is where we see some of this struggle. And so I can appreciate that's
interesting. Mm-hmm.
But I think we want symmetry, like our brain wants
right.
symmetry.
So my brain wants to see balance. To me, that's symmetry.
Good.
When all parts work together.
Good. Okay, so going back to, and again, I think this applies to a lot of the rare breeds, so this is why I'm kind
yes.
of keep coming back to
sure.
this. Have you had any success with, say, old frozen semen, anything like that?
Yes. Many years ago, Barb Binder worked for ICSB mm-hmm. in Oregon, mm-hmm. and thankfully she fell in love with the first dandy we sent up there. So we have a bitching season. We'd phone Barbara, ship the bitch up. They always came home pregnant. We never missed, ever.
And I love Barbara.
Oh, I moaned the day that she retired. But that was how we turned the corner in this extremely rare breed. I brought in semen from Harry's grandfather, his uncle, his sire, him, offspring. I think there's probably 10 that we brought
wow.
in. And they just nicked with my mm-hmm. last bitch, which was a cricket daughter. It was funny, when I went there and judged, I didn't put up Emma's big winner at the time. I put up this young 9 to 12 puppy walked in the ring. It was so long and so low and so weaselly, which is what we call the correct outline. I was in love, and I said to my ring steward, the husband of my beautiful bitch has just walked in the ring. She looked at me with wide eyes. I thought, my God, where the hell did that come from? So afterwards, Emma didn't know me from a bar of soap, and she stands there and goes, why? And I said, because my dogs at home are this long, and yours are that long. And that trait is so difficult to keep. The Skye apparently has no problem staying long in body. The Dandy does. But I think we've actually cemented in length. We may even have a bitch at home that might actually... My husband says, that's a long doggy.
Too long? Oh, no!
No, she's not too long, but I'll tell you, even to my eye, she looks extremely long.
Wow.
So I think it's there now, mm-hmm. but that is from 1998 to 2017. Mm-hmm. That's how long it took mm-hmm. to cement it in. And when other people use these dogs to get that length, they don't get the length. They don't have the gene to match
Interesting.
It.
Interesting. So you talked about one of my favorite things in dog breeding, which is the nick.
Yes.
That certain lines just
yes.
click, and certain lines just don't. Can you expand on that at all?
You know, it's interesting. It's quite fascinating to me. In the dandy world right now, there's a real effort to select the stud dog that is the most unrelated to your bitch. Mm-hmm. And I think to myself, my bloody God, no wonder they're starting to all look like a boarding kennel in the ring. No two are remotely alike. And for me, some of these people have come to us and used some pretty influential dogs from our viewpoint. Mm-hmm. Dogs we can pinpoint what they're mm-hmm. going to give us. Mm-hmm. Their offspring looks nothing like what we expect from that stud dog. The nick is not there. They don't gel at all.
Interesting.
Fact is, I think it's a waste. I've actually let some really good semen go out because I didn't want to tell somebody no. Mm. But in retrospect, we shouldn't have done it. It was a waste. It was expensive for them, and mm-hmm. the semen is lost and gone forever. The dogs are dead.
So your success, your nicks, and they are consistent, right? Like yes. you see it every single time, this particular line and this particular line, you can layer them together,
yep.
and consistently they're going to produce for you.
The greatest compliment I ever got was from a judge friend who'd flown to another country and judged a terrier group show, and she phoned on her way back, and she said, I turned around and saw this beautiful dandy bitch on the table. And she said, there's only one place in the world you could get that dog. And it was one of ours. And to me, that was the ultimate compliment. Look in the ring, you can tell where it came from. And I think that's what all breeders should be wanting to do. I think you look at a Norwegian Elkhound, you know whether Pat Craig Trotter bred it or she didn't.
Yes.
It's the stamp is there. And to me, you may not always agree with what I'm looking for, but at least you know what I'm going to produce.
Right. Okay, so management of your bitches. We run into this, the rare breed that, you know, mm-hmm. that I grew up with, Clumber
right.
Spaniels, struggle with the bitches to get them to produce. Do you have that problem?
We find we're very successful if we breed early.
Okay.
And annually. I like to breed a bitch just around 18, 20 months, mm-hmm. which is probably younger than a lot of people would do. But I find they're very fertile. I think it's kind of like the 16 or 18-year-old girl. Mm. They are normally going to conceive. And I find if I breed them every year, every other season, they are going to have a litter. We don't have the luxury of having a litter early and then breeding one after we're finished showing. We do our breeding first, and then we show our special, our bitches. Like the Angelina
right.
Ballerina
right.
bitch had two litters of five, and then,
okay.
she, went
and
out
then she went out
at 6 years of
right.
age. Yes.
Right. So you're fortunate you have a breed that holds up
yes.
into its older
and,
years,
yep.
you
yep.
know, and comes back from pregnancy well.
Oh, they free whelp, they raise their puppies, they feed them till I never stop the bitch. Mm-hmm. They stop it, and mm-hmm. it's usually 14, 16 weeks of age. And they pull right up, and they look better than they did before.
Right.
We put a body on them with those
right.
litters.
Right. I think that we see that in a lot of breeds, that you just get that rib spring, you know,
yes.
that maturity
yep.
in a bitch.
Yep.
Okay. Very good. And so looking to the future in dandies,
yes.
do you see the breed, the gene pool expanding? Where do you see the future?
I think the internet and Facebook mm-hmm. have helped immeasurably.
Okay.
There's a group around the world that are totally devoted to the breed. They are wonderful companion dogs, and people, like many people with their own breed, it's the right one for mm-hmm. them. And I think there's the pictures that are posted, they pique people's interest, and they see dogs, they go, wow, maybe I could use something from that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've expanded that pool a lot. My only hope is that more young people come into the breed. We are a very gray, elderly-looking bunch. Not so much in Europe. The Europeans have some kind of a secret that we have lost. There is a lot of interest. The young gal we work with in Finland is 32, I think, and mm-hmm. she's been at it for 10 years.
Wow.
And very clever. She's a really good dog person. Emma Greenway in Australia is a young person, and she has done extremely well.
And I think you just hit on a really, really important topic, which is how to expand our sport to young people in our country. And I have heard the same comment from others that overseas, other countries, they have young people coming up. Do they have better mentorship programs? How do you see that happening?
I don't know about better mentorship programs, but I think perhaps the young people are more receptive to being mentored. We have some young people that we have brought into our little group of dandy people and help them. We put good dogs with them. I think a lot of the time, it's hard. As a breeder, you don't get many good puppies, so you want them to go where they're going to be used and reach their potential. Yet there were two Angelina Ballerina daughters that went off to people that spoke well. Nothing ever really happened. very, very disappointing to have that kind of quality go and end up being spayed and not shown. And it was very unsettling. So there's that part that makes you want to say, why do I do this? Why do I entrust a new person with this quality? Yet I think if that person is well-intentioned and goes into the ring and is always beaten by the breeder that kept the better one, how disheartening is that? If we never have a chance to win, it's that
That's a really good point, and I think people don't...
Yeah, you walk a fine line, and unfortunately, not everybody lives near you so that you can help all the time, but we try to. I don't know what the real answer is. I think today people are so busy, and it takes two people to maintain a home. Buy one in California, good luck, and have a space for a dog. Life has changed. It's quite different than when I was growing up. So I'm heartened. Last night at the Dogs and Review dinner, a lot of young people, very successful, doing great jobs. So hopefully they too are mentoring people into the sport.
I think that's important. And I think we are seeing sort of a resurgence of it.
I think so.
We'll see.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.